Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Access to Counsel's Efforts conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. William Stock, President of American Immigration Lawyers Association. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Thank you very much, Alexis, and welcome to everyone. Thank you for your time today. Access to counsel and the assistance of counsel in any legal proceeding is fundamental for ensuring that our laws are properly executed and that due process is afforded to those people who are seeking any kind of benefits or any kind of redress from the U.S. government. And access to counsel is just as important in administrative proceedings before government agencies as it is in a court of law. The Administrative Procedures Act recognized that in 1946 by providing for access to counsel for any person compelled to appear before an administrative agency. Now, we know that in more recent history, particularly the implementation of President Trump's January 27th, 2017 executive order on protecting the nation from forest terrorist entry, the travel ban, it focused attention on the vital role that attorneys have in allowing individuals to assert their regulatory, statutory, and constitutional rights before government agents. And access to an attorney in immigration proceedings has been an issue that our two organizations, the American Immigration Lawyers Association and the American Immigration Council, have been working on for decades. We've been trying to ensure that individuals appearing before consulates overseas and those detained by CBP for inspection have meaningful access to an attorney. The agencies have not always been responsive to these kinds of requests. And most recently at Dulles Airport during the first weekend after the travel ban, attorneys were denied access to CBP detainees in spite of a federal court order that CBP allow that access. So attorney access, though, is really much bigger than the travel ban. Reports of travelers, such as Dr. Russo, who you're going to hear from shortly, are all too common. People held in secondary inspection for hours while undergoing intensive and aggressive questioning, and even where the laws or regulations permit their entry and their proposed activity in the United States. So the lack of meaningful access to counsel can result in unjust denials of admission, expedited removal from the United States of legitimate temporary visitors and permanent residents, and even people who claim U.S. citizen status are not immune. So we need a standard to ensure access to an attorney. And after careful deliberation, AILA and the American Immigration Council decided to issue a formal request to the Departments of State and Homeland Security to promulgate new rules to ensure that access to counsel is the new norm. Melissa Crowe will be explaining a bit more about that initiative. And the petition also complements other access to counsel efforts that are underway. For example, in February, Senator Kamala Harris introduced a bill to guarantee access to counsel to those who are held or detained at a port of entry or at a detention facility overseen by CBP or ICE. And a companion bill was introduced in the House by Representative Jayapal. Now, unfortunately, Senator Harris, who was scheduled to lead off our call, gave us just notice that she was unable due to her Senate duties to join us. She will, however, be happy to answer questions that can be sent to her staff by email. They can be conveyed to us by phone today, and we will ensure that the contact information for her communications director is circulated after the call. So with that, I'm delighted to turn to our other speakers. I'm going to turn it over now to Melissa Crowe, Legal Director of the American Immigration Council. The council is AILA's partner in the petition for rulemaking. Melissa?
Thank you. Apologies in advance for my raspy voice. As Bill mentioned, the American Immigration Council and the American Immigration Lawyers Association have long advocated that non-citizens must have access to counsel in administrative proceedings before various U.S. government agencies, both to protect their rights and to ensure that our laws are properly interpreted and applied. In 2012, the Council, AILA, and Penn State Center for Immigrants' Rights published a report called Behind Closed Doors, which provides an overview of restrictions on access to counsel in administrative proceedings before the DHS immigration agencies based on a nationwide survey of immigration lawyers. In a nutshell, we learned that DHS routinely interferes with attorneys' efforts to represent their clients, particularly in examinations by Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. And that report is publicly available on the Council's website at www.AmericanImmigrationCouncil.org. The experience of countless ALA lawyers has also revealed a presumption against access to counsel in visa interviews and other proceedings at U.S. embassies and consulates overseas. So the petition filed today by the Council and ALA seeks to remedy certain aspects of these problems through proposed rulemaking that would ensure access to counsel for three categories of individuals and entities. First, petitioning individuals and employers, as well as non-citizens who are applying for non-immigrant and immigrant visas at a U.S. embassy or consulate. Second, U.S. citizens and nationals who are seeking recognition or relinquishment of their citizens or nationality status. And third, individuals seeking admission to the United States who are placed in secondary and deferred inspection. A petition for rulemaking is a request by an interested person or entity to a federal government agency for the issuance, in this case, or the amendment or repeal of an existing rule. These requests are permitted under the Administrative Procedure Act, which is at 5 U.S.C. Section 553E. The petition is filed with a government agency, or two, as in this case, that has authority to issue the requested regulation. The Administrative Procedure Act requires agencies to respond to petitions for rulemaking within a reasonable time, and the courts have construed that in various ways, and to give petitioners, quote, prompt notice when a petition is denied, either in whole or in part, along with a brief statement of the grounds for the denial of the petition. If the agency fails to respond to the petition within a reasonable time, the petitioner can sue to get a response. Denials of petitions for rulemaking are also subject to review by the courts, although the scope of such review is limited in certain respects. In a nutshell, agencies are not required to respond to every individual issue that's raised in a petition. But there has to be a reasoned response on the whole. In closing, I just want to make two additional points. First of all, we understand and bore in mind as we drafted this petition that U.S. consular officials and Customs and Border Protection officers are understandably concerned about being able to conduct interviews and examinations expeditiously. But our view is that in the instances under discussion, an attorney's presence at an interview can actually enhance efficiency by promptly addressing questions that arise and clarifying complicated legal issues. We've seen time and time again that unrepresented individuals can easily spend substantial time and money, and agency adjudicators likewise spend a lot of unnecessary time and resources grappling with complex questions that an attorney could address quite easily. Finally, I just want to emphasize that this petition does not request government-funded counsel. It seeks to protect individuals' access to counsel, that is, the right of individuals who choose to retain their own attorneys, who could be paid attorneys or could be attorneys who have agreed to represent them pro bono, to be accompanied by their attorneys in these various contexts, and to have the benefit of their counsel when they're interacting with the agencies. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Russo, who's Director of Research at the French National Center for Scientific Research, and whose detention this year by CBP highlights the importance of access to counsel in secondary inspection. Dr. Russo, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. I'll try to sum up my experience in a few minutes. I landed at the Houston Intercontinental Airport on February 22nd at, let's say, 2:30 p.m., and then I was checked by a CPB officer who said to me that he needed to do another checking, and they brought me in this special room, and then I began to wait. 1 hour after, I was interrogated by another officer, and the interrogation lasted about 3 to 4 hours, interrupted by many other things. I mean, he said to me, you have to go back to the room. He asked me again to come back, and so on and so forth. So he asked me a lot of questions about my family, about my work. I'm a scholar, so I'm preparing and doing lectures. He didn't really understand what I was doing. As far as I understood immediately what was going on, the problem was rather simple. I was coming in the U.S. with an ESTE, I mean a tourist visa, to give a lecture. But on my passport, he see a visa, a J-1, because I was in the U.S. last year for teaching at Columbia University, and I got a J-1 for that. So the J-1 expired in January. So he told me, you have an expired visa and you're coming back to the U.S. to teach, and this is illegal. And I tried to explain him that I've been doing that for about 35 to 40 years and I never had any problem. So, and I tried to explain that the whole thing, especially the letter I had, the letter of invitation I had, was done by the university. And as usual, the university has done all the stuff to prepare my venue in the U.S. He didn't understand what I was saying. He said I was wrong and I was illegal. And after, I don't know exactly, about 4 hours, he said that I was denied to enter the United States. And then began another kind of interrogation, let's say an official one, about one hour again. And I have to sign the record. And what was said on the record that I was in a certain sense expelled and deported from the U.S. And I'll be deported back to Paris. Okay, is it okay for my English? I'm sorry. I'm trying to...
That's very good. Thank you.
Okay. So if I had to say, I mean, my feeling during the first part of this detention, I feel astonished because I didn't understand what was going on. I tried to explain to this guy that I was absolutely right to do what I was doing. I've been doing that a lot of time, but he absolutely refused to hear me. So at the point, I said to myself, probably there is a new rule or something I don't know, or a mistake has been done by the university, whatever, I don't know. So I had no choice than to accept the situation. So some other important details regarding your own problem today. He asked me about 3 hours after the beginning of my interrogation if I wanted to join to call the French consulate. And I said, of course, yes, I wanted to do it. He did it at about 6, 7 p.m., I don't remember exactly, and nobody was on the phone. And I realized that afterwards, when I had a discussion with the French consul, he said to me that the officer called the normal number of the French consulate. He didn't call the emergency number, which is, of course, very different. So I didn't have any assistance from my own consulate during the detention. And at any time, the officer said to me that I can have an access to an attorney or a counsel or whatever. And I have to confess, probably because I'm French or because I was a little bit astonished by the situation. I didn't have the reflex to ask for an attorney or a counsel. I simply accepted the situation because I didn't know what to do. So they were so surprised by the whole thing. So, and then to finish, I have been in detention during about 10 hours, and they at about 1:30 a.m., another officer came and he said to me that I was released, that I was free to go into the United States. He gave me back my passport. He gave me back my phone because he took my phone for 10 hours. And with no, the only explanation the officer who released me said to me was, okay, the officer who interrogated you made a mistake. He was an experienced, and he didn't know that people like you, I mean, a scholar, has perfectly the right to give a lecture and to be paid because there is an exemption for scholars in this situation. He didn't know that. I mean, and I said, so you kept me 10 hours just because this guy was inexperienced. He didn't reply. So, and to finish a few words, I wasn't alone, of course. There were about 4 to 5 people with me until I left this room, and I saw at least one who was brought to the plane to be deported. And I have to confess, this is a scene I will never forget, because the guy was brought to the plane with chains, shackles, and handcuffs. So I just spent the few hours before being released, saying to myself, I'll be brought to the Air France desk like a prisoner. And I asked the officer who released me if this was the procedure, and he said yes. So this is simply unbelievable, the way people are treated, just because I could have made a mistake with my visa, which was not the case. I didn't make any mistakes. I tried to sum up the whole thing, too.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Russo. Now, Brent Renison, who is a partner and is the Global Immigration Council on Entry Law in Portland, Oregon, and who was one of the principal authors of this petition, is going to talk a little bit about how Dr. Russo's experience is representative of a much broader class of people who are coming here and who may benefit from access to counsel. Brent?
Yes. Thank you very much. You know, what's interesting is that we have about 1 million entries every day into the United States, and about 752 per day are found inadmissible. And, certainly there are more people put in secondary inspection than that, but it's a very small percentage, but still very significant. And as Dr. Russo talked about, the many people who were there with him. This situation is happening every day throughout the United States in every airport that accepts international travelers. And it's a significant issue affecting not only people like Dr. Russo, but also lawful permanent residents who are denied entry, like recently Juan Garcia Mosqueda, an Argentinian curator, with a U.S. green card, denied any access to counsel, to U.S. citizens such as Muhammad Ali Jr., a U.S. citizen who was questioned for several hours about his faith. And there are many more examples in the petition, which should be available pretty soon here. I think Bill will mention that. And also the American Immigration Council's very thorough report that's available on their website, which also cites to many examples, including U.S. citizens being detained and deported. When we go to the post office, we assume that the price of a postage stamp is not negotiable, and that's because there are protocols in place. At the present, though, access to counsel is completely up to the whim of officials. So I wanted to also point out that in my experience, this situation that Dr. Russo experienced is not unique. In fact, in 2004, I represented a famous British author, Ian McEwan, who is the author of Atonement, and is celebrated. And in 2004, he was also denied because of the inspector thought his honorarium was too much. This is exactly the situation that Dr. Russo has experienced. And back then, Mr. McEwan was refused entry, not only detained, but he was refused entry and not allowed into the country. Luckily, he was in Canada in pre-flight inspection, so he didn't experience the detention that others have faced. But then it took us a frantic 24 hours calling the consulate, calling the port of entry, facing resistance, until finally I was able to explain to them that in 1998, Congress passed the section INA 212Q, like question, dealing specifically with academic honoraria. And a few years later, I believe it was in 2000 or 2001, proposed regulations were issued that clarified very clearly for CBP officers what was acceptable and what was not. And in that proposed regulation, it was very clear that no limit on honorarium amount was relevant. Yet that proposed regulation never became final. And so the CBP officers don't know this little fact, and they make mistakes like this. In fact, it was so serious a mistake, it involved high-level people at CBP getting involved. Many, many hours of wasted government resources, all to solve a simple problem that any one of us immigration lawyers could provide. So this refusal of access to counsel really results in government inefficiency, waste, and the violation of people's individual rights. And so what we're asking for is fairness. And we're also looking at providing perspective to the agency. We can be the partner of the agencies. And that's a very important thing. Thanks. Hello?
Sorry about that. I apologize. It's very hard to... So at this point, we want to provide the opportunity for questions and answers to any of our speakers. So Alexis, if you could give us the instructions of how people can ask questions, and we'll try and get those addressed as best we can.
Absolutely. And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, to ask a question, that is star and one on your touch tone phone. And we have a question from Maria Pena. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Thank you for doing this call. I wonder, you know, my understanding is that, you know, foreigners, you know, have a right to counsel and to reach their consulate like Mr. Russo. But I was wondering if... you know, obviously they violated international law because he didn't have access to counsel. So I was wondering, what's the status of his case now? Did anything come about after, you know, being held for so long and being interrogated? And the other question I had was that the DHS budget obviously does not, according to advocacy groups, does not have enough budget for access to counsel. And I was wondering why you guys did not address that in the petition. Thank you.
Dr. Russo, if we, maybe you could address the first part of that question. You have been able to travel now that this got resolved. Is that the correct outcome?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Okay, so this was sorted out after about 10 hours, when it might have taken about 2 minutes for a lawyer to be able to point to the correct rule and have that officer educated. So that's part of what we're talking about here, is that, you know, where there's simply a misunderstanding of the facts or what the rules are, access to a lawyer is really important. Now, your question about the budget actually is, I want to be very clear about what we're talking about here, access to counsel, by which we mean the opportunity to consult with counsel and to have that counsel interact with the government. We're not talking about the government obligation to provide counsel. That's a separate set of issues. They are really important issues, but we wanted to point out in this petition that all we are talking about is that even where a person has a lawyer that they have already retained, or where they could get pro bono legal assistance, the agency still will put up barriers to that person talking to their lawyer, will put up barriers to the lawyer talking to the agency and trying to sort out what the problem is. And this petition is to really address that question of access to counsel.
And Bill, can I just follow up on one
sure, please.
Comment on that? This is Brent Renison. Essentially, I think what people don't understand is that there are no written rules on when attorneys, when people like this are permitted to have an attorney to consult with or to intercede on their behalf or to make a call. There are no standards. There's no protocols. It's like totally up to each individual CBP officer if they will allow an attorney to intercede or not. So the whole point of the petition is simply to establish some ground rules so that everybody follows those rules, but it's not to pay for counsel. That is up to the individual.
Okay. Mr. Mitch, did that address the questions?
Yeah. Okay.
Great. Thank you very much. Alexis, do we have some other questions?
And as a reminder to ask a question, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone. That is star 1 on your touch-tone phone. And it appears we have no further questions at this time.
Okay.
Excuse me. May I add something?
Please, go ahead.
Yes, because I heard the previous speaker saying about this actor in 2004 who was supposedly to be paid too much. This is exactly what happened to me. I didn't realize it immediately, but this is the officer who released me after 10 hours who told me that when he saw the amount of the honorarium for my lecture, which was about, I don't remember exact, $2,000, he didn't believe me. He said, it's not, this term is not for a lecture. You will do something else. And this officer, the guy who released me, said to me, and I was so astonished when he said that, he said to me, next time you come to the U.S., you have to bring with you the excerpt of the immigration court or whatever, the U.S. law, to present to an officer the fact that you are benefiting from an exemption, and then you are allowed to come to go into the States with a tourist visa and to be paid for a lecture. So I was really astonished. I said to this guy, so I have to tell to an officer what is his job.
Dr. Russo, this is Brent Renison. I just want to say that it's terrible that you suffered the same exact treatment based on lack of knowledge of the rules that Mr. Ian McEwen, the author, experienced in 2004. And this is just these examples that we're looking at in our petition.
Okay.
And so for those who are still on the call, I would like to thank you very much for taking the time to listen in. As we said, we've been in touch with the communications staff for Senator Harris, and she has requested that information will be provided to you in an email from Bell Woods shortly, so that you can reach out to her with any questions you have about her bill. So if there's nothing else from Bell, that I believe will conclude the call, but let's just double check.
Bill, it's Melissa. If I could just add that if people are interested in other examples of individuals who have been affected by the lack of access to counsel in these situations, there are examples on pages 16 and 17 of the petition. And I would draw people's attention to the text of the proposed rule, which is at the end of the petition, starting at page 21.
Thank you. And certainly, if you have any questions about the technicality of those rules and the exact language and what's going on in that, please don't hesitate to direct them to Bell, and she'll make sure that they get answered by the most relevant staff person. With that, I'll thank everybody for participating, and Alexis, that looks like we can end our call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank everyone.